Could a single entity be responsible for a multitude of our own paranormal experiences throughout history? Rosemary Ellen Guiley went out to research the Djinn connection, and we'll talk with her about that in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Honored tonight to have Rosemary Ellen Guiley with us. She is also, of course, our co-author with our book, The Talking to the Dead. She's written one called The Djinn Connection. Rosemary has worked full-time in the paranormal and metaphysical field since 1983. She's a consulting editor of Fate magazine, publishing also her own newsletter. And here she is back on Coast to Coast. Rosemary, how are you?
Hi, George. Busy as ever. It sure is great to be back on the show.
Yeah, you sure are. You're everywhere. You were also a guest of mine on Beyond Belief. You did a great job. People are still sending me emails about your performance on that program.
I can't wait to see it.
I know. It's coming up. It'll be on a Friday. And, of course, if you're looking at it, you can also record it and keep it and look at it forever, Rosemary. Anyways, this is a fascinating subject. I talked a week or so ago about the djinn, but they just seem to be cropping up more and more. Give me your explanation on just what the djinn might be.
They are a race of supernatural beings who are attached to the earth. They were here on the earth before us. And, in fact, they had dominion over the earth, which they lost to us. They live in a parallel dimension. In earlier times, people believe they lived underground or they just retreated to very remote areas. But in modern terms, it really makes sense as a parallel dimension. They have access to our world, and there are those among them who aren't very friendly toward us. They're not all bad, they're not all good, just like human beings, but some of them have a lot of hostility towards humans. I believe, based on my research of years and years tracking these entities throughout the paranormal realm, that they account for a lot of our negative experiences, hauntings, possession, entity encounters, and also abductions, including the ET abduction phenomenon.
All right, we're going to get into all this. Now, the Middle Eastern folklore of genies popping out of the bottle and things like that, are they tied into the djinn?
Absolutely. That's exactly what we're talking about. The word genie came from the term djinn, which means the hidden ones. They've always been kind of hidden from people. They don't want us to know what they're doing. But when old Arabian folk tales, which are collected into a body of works called the Arabian Nights, when those were translated for the Western audiences into French and English, some of the French translations translated djinn as genie. And that's actually kind of a corruption of the term genius, which is a Roman spirit of place. So djinn is really the correct name for these entities, but they became embedded in our popular culture as the genie in the bottle.
Where did they come from, Rosemary? How'd they develop?
There are different stories about their origins. One very ancient Arabian legend says that they came from the winds. They were literally primordial wind spirits, and they were often responsible for ill winds that blew, bringing in disease and bad luck. In the Quran, they're explained as pre-existing humans created from a substance called smokeless fire. So the djinn have really no known form, no physical form that we can identify with. But they have the ability to shapeshift. They can shapeshift into human forms. They can shapeshift into animal forms. They especially like to shapeshift into weird forms that are sometimes half animal, half human, or combinations of creatures.
Could they be fallen angels, Rosemary?
There are a lot of parallels between the bad djinn and fallen angels. For example, the Quran tells the story that the djinn lost their place in this world and in paradise because they refused to bow to humans when God created humans. At the beginning, there were angels and djinn. Then along came humans. And God issued the instructions to the angels to bow to the humans, his new creations. The angels did. The djinn, who had free will, said no, because these new entities are inferior to us. And so they were pushed out in consequence. And the angry ones then become the evil djinn who follow a leader named Iblis, whose name means he who is despaired. And the jinn all have to leave, and the bad ones then torment people, and they are granted a reprieve until Judgment Day to prove their case that human beings are unworthy. So the jinn are like humans, the good, the bad, and the ugly. They have different motivations, different intentions. They have their own factions of terrorists, just like humans do. And we interact with those angry ones. We can also interact with more benevolent ones, but I do believe that most of our interactions with them are negative because these are the ones who are making the effort to act out against human beings.
How do we know we're not being tricked? If we interact with the benevolent ones, how do we know they're really not the evil ones?
Well, sometimes that proves to be the case, and we see this a lot in entity contact experiences where an entity starts out as Mr. Nice Guy, even assumes a human-like personality, and then once they have an attachment to a person, they turn, and they become more manipulative, controlling, mm-hmm. negative. They can really wreak havoc with a person. Throughout the literature on jinn, going back centuries and centuries, when they are described, they are most often described as vengeful by nature and very deceitful, that they're untrustworthy. And so even if we think we're dealing with them in a positive way, they might be able to turn the tables on us at any time.
Rosemary, the fact that folklore and legend talks about the jinn so often, what does that tell you about the real possibilities that these entities might be real?
They are real. I've had encounters with a variety of entities over the course of my research, some of them positive, some of them ambivalent, and some of them quite hostile. And I believe that they, the jinn, comprise quite a hidden portion of our entity contact experiences. They masquerade as other entities that we know by other names. We might think we're dealing with a demon when we're really dealing with jinn. There's no way to scientifically prove these entities, but we have hundreds and hundreds of years of persuasive anecdotal experience where people describe the same sorts of experiences over and over again around the planet, throughout time, the same core experiences with certain behaviors, certain characteristics. That says to me that we clearly have had interactions with otherworldly beings from the time we first came on this planet.
You know, when people get possessed, could it be, you know, the evil jinn that might be doing that, or is that a demon of some type?
They do have the capability of possessing people and animals as well. Many times, I think we're dealing with jinn in possession cases when we think we're dealing with demons. I've often been asked, well, how do you know the difference? Because if the jinn can act in demonic ways, how do we know whether or not we're dealing with demons or with jinn? And oftentimes, it is hard for experts, investigators, people who do exorcisms and releasements, it is hard to know the difference. Many times the jinn are very difficult to cast out, and they often have very selfish motives for attaching to people. They want something for themselves. It's not a spiritual battle for the soul, but more a takeover for their own purposes. They will, however, absorb and use soul energy.
What causes them to show up in someone's life? Do they get conjured up by the individual? How do they show up?
Sometimes they do come because people have either deliberately or even unwittingly called them in by experimenting with magical practices or sometimes even spirit communication. They're often attracted to people who make the wrong decisions. They want power. They want control. They want wealth. They want to manipulate people. And these people then become easy manipulation targets for the jinn because many of them like to sow the seeds of chaos. They can also be attracted to people who have weakened defenses. They're in poor health. they're in emotional trauma. And these sorts of emotions seem to be a source of food for a lot of opportunistic entities. I think also they watch us. They might track individuals or families for generations and monitor them for how they might be useful to them.
Do they take physical form, Rosemary?
They can. They can appear as real people. They can acquire forms that are solid, that can wrestle with people and grab people. They can be very beautiful. They can be very monstrous. It depends on what effect they want to have on the people they've targeted.
Now, when they interact with human beings and they come through these various sources, I assume they can also sneak through a Ouija board, can't they?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, some of the negative entities that show up frequently on Ouija boards are quite likely djinn. I believe that the entity known as Zozo, who is a negative entity particularly associated with the Ouija boards, Zozo and various other Z names it goes by, that Zozo is a djinn.
Where are they in terms of in the cosmos? I mean, are they in a different dimension? Are they in the bowels of the planet? Where the heck are these things?
In lore, they live underground. They like remote areas, caves, tunnels, wastelands. I've encountered them in remote areas in America, especially in areas where there have been a lot of mining operations. But from a modern perspective, they exist in a parallel dimension. We have a number of dimensions that are in our universe, which really is a multiverse. These are all connected to Earth. So they have a tie to the physical planet of the Earth, but being in another dimension, they are at a different vibrational rate in their natural state, and so we don't see them or encounter them most of the time. They're sort of around a corner, so to speak, but they are capable of coming into our world when people call them in or they find thin spots, these portal areas that are all over the planet where the boundaries between dimensions are very permeable.
If you were to see one of these things walking down the street, what would it look like? What would it be wearing?
Nobody really knows what the true form of the djinn is. In ancient lore, they favor forms like snakes, reptilian forms, animal forms, black dogs. But one could walk down the street and we might not even know it. According to ancient lore, however, that even when they take beautiful human forms, there's something about them that gives them away if you know what to look for. I think that there are these beings moving around on the planet. They don't seem to have the capability to stay for long periods of time, but they do come and mingle with us. And there are even hybrids. I do believe that we have a variety of hybrids that have come onto the planet, and it's very difficult to tell them from us.
These forms that they take, you know, different animals, things, you know, I saw, for example, remember the movie The Omen? Was it a Rottweiler? What was it, that kind of dog? It was a Doberman or a Rottweiler?
It was a Rottweiler.
Yeah, would a djinn do something like that?
Yes, they will take whatever form suits their purpose. They're famous, for example, as black dogs, and black spectral dogs have been in folklore all over the planet.
With red eyes, too, right?
Oftentimes with red eyes. I believe they account for a lot of our mysterious creature encounters, these creatures that should not be. The monster birds, the animals that seem to be composed of four or five different species, or monstrous sorts of animals. People often encounter them when they're out in remote areas, and they have a surprise when they're camping or walking down a trail. These might be forms of djinn.
What do they want, Rosemary? What are they after?
They have a variety of motives. just like human beings have a variety of motives. Some of them are on a campaign of terror against us, and literally they want their homeland back. They want the planet back. They want to have dominion over it again. Others are interested in tormenting us for their own food source. They get energy off of us for their own amusement or entertainment. Some of them actually become infatuated with us, and they want to attach to people and follow them around and even have romantic relationships with them. Some of them are tricksters. So we have a variety of agendas going on, but the concentration of our engagement with them seems to be in the negative arena. When we have persistent hauntings that are very troubling and draining to people and cannot be resolved, certain possession cases, and many of these abductions that we've attributed to extraterrestrials, I believe the jinn are major players in all of these activities. Whether or not they account for them all, it's hard to say. I have talked to researchers who say, look, it's all jinn. They account for everything paranormal, all the aliens, all the ghosts, all the wow. Spirits. In my own research, I can see a major presence of the jinn, but I haven't become convinced myself yet that they account for everything.
In ancient Irish folklore, they talked about leprechauns. Might they have been jinn as well?
One of the startling things about my research, comparing jinn to other entities, was the similarity between fairies and jinn, and including leprechauns in that. In fact, there are so many similarities in terms of their origins, how they got pushed out of the planet, where they went, what their abilities are, how they interact with people, what their strengths and weaknesses are. It's possible to say that jinn and fairies are probably one and the same.
Well, we know all the stories about leprechauns, don't we? This would be fascinating if they were indeed one in the same, doing whatever they do.
Well, you know, a lot of our Celtic ancestors, which is where we get most of our fairy lore in our culture from, they were frightened of fairies. The fairies were beings with tremendous powers who did not hold human beings in high regard, and you wanted to stay out of their way. We find a similar pattern with the jinn. Now, there are benevolent fairies. The fairies like us, they're not all one or the other. We tend to want to make things all good or bad when we look at the spirit world. We want definitive explanations and descriptions, and those are very difficult to do when you're dealing with entities that morph from one shape to another. So I do believe that there are many beneficial fairies, and many of them are willing to work with people, for example, to cultivate amazing gardens with plants that have a very high spiritual vibration that can be used in medicine. So it's a very varied picture.
Not many people in the West, Rosemary, would be familiar with the jinn. Now, if you said genies, they think of the TV show I Dream of Genie or Sinbad or something like that. But not many of them would know what a jinn would be. Would you agree?
Absolutely, George. And much of the rest of the world is very familiar with the jinn. They just didn't make it onto our paranormal radar and our culture. They got subsumed into the folktale and fairy lore, the genie in the bottle. And consequently, people think of them as a fantasy, as something silly and quirky and goofy. That's how they're often portrayed in television and films, when actually outside of our culture, the jinn are known as their real name and their real powers, and they are regarded with a lot of respect and even wariness.
So, Rosemary, when we come back, I want to see how you put this connection between jinn and shadow people and even ET abductions. We'll be back. Now, Wednesday night into Thursday morning, those of you who listen to us on XM, we're changing channels. So make a note of that. You will be able to pick us up on channel 246, okay? Wednesday night into Thursday morning. And for the time being, it will be the permanent change, of course. 246. So just write it down now. Remember it. So when you're looking around Wednesday night, don't panic. XM channel 246. Back in a moment, more with Rosemary Ellen Guiley as we talk about the Gin Connection on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Rosemary Ellen Guiley. She also is an expert in dreams. We'll talk with her about dreams next hour. Rosemary, this connection between the gin and ET abductions, shadow people, tell me about the connection.
I was led into the ET abduction arena through shadow people. I started researching shadow people almost 10 years ago. In 2004, I started getting a lot of emails from people spontaneously from all over describing terrifying bedroom visitations by these dark figures that looked like they were made entirely of shadow. They had solid form to them when they wanted, yet they could disappear through walls. They looked like the silhouettes of tall men wearing coats and often hats. And so in 2005, I decided to launch a formal study project to figure out what these entities were, because they defied categorization. They didn't seem to be ghosts. They, even though they seemed to be evil to people, they didn't act like demons either. What were they? And so I collected hundreds of anecdotes from people, testimonies about their experiences, and began breaking them down into patterns, what the entities look like, the conditions in the experiencer's life, behavior, etc. And I discovered in the course of that many of these shadow people experiencers were also ET abductees or had had significant encounters with entities or major sightings, but the abduction theme was very prominent. And I haven't run into that with a lot of other entity contact experiences to such a degree. So it made me wonder what really was going on. So some simultaneous things happened. I concluded after years of studying the shadow people that they were jinn, that this is a major form taken by jinn. And they also have a presence in the ET abduction scenario. I went back through the abduction literature, going back to cases from the 1950s. I talked to abduction researchers. I found evidence for shadow people throughout the abduction literature, and yet connections between the shadow people and what was going on in the abductions were never quite well made. They were considered to be just, one of those side phenomena. They would often precede abductions, sometimes by weeks, months, even years. Abductees might start with shadow people experiences in childhood and then later on go into the full-blown abductions. The shadow people weren't often coming along with the abducting entities, but they seem to be an advance guard. So there was a definite connection. If shadow people are a form of jinn, and the shadow people have a major presence in the ET abduction phenomenon, then that means the jinn are heavily involved in that. They might be working in cooperation with other entities. They might be working in conflict, in competition with other entities for us. They probably shapeshift into other entity forms so that we think we're dealing with the grays, for example, or with reptilians or with a host of other forms. Sometimes these are one-off forms. They look more like beings from a fairy book than what we would associate with visitors from outer space. I believe the abduction scenario is not really an outer space thing anyway. I don't rule out that we could be visited by beings from off-world planets.
Right.
But the evidence for it being an interdimensional experience is much stronger. These are entities really coming from dimensions attached to Earth. And these sorts of observations and conclusions have been in the ufological literature for some time, but the jinn have not been present. So in writing the jinn connection, and I did go into this some in The Vengeful Jinn, which came out a couple of years ago, my purpose here is to bring the jinn to the attention of the Western audience, and especially to investigators and researchers, and say, here's an entity that's active in these kinds of experiences, and they're not on our radar. We need to know about them. We need to factor them into our analyses, our considerations, because that's going to determine how we can respond to these, how we can protect ourselves, how we can end things, how we can ward things off.
You know, Rosemary, if they're coming from other dimensions and they're not strictly physical and they're abducting humans, doing biological experiments on them, what the heck do they want?
One of the themes that's come out in the ET abduction literature, which applies to Jinn as well, is the hybrid program. We have all of these abductees who say that they have been taken for the sole purpose of their reproductive material. Female abductees have talked about being impregnated and having their fetuses removed. Mm-hmm. They have sometimes been reacquainted with the hybrid offspring. They've been told various things. One of the stories is that the ETs need our genetic stock to replenish their own stock because they've become depleted. I believe there's a darker thing going on. I don't think the abduction scenario has anything to do with the best interests of human beings or raising humans into any sort of spiritual awareness. It's abusive, it's manipulative, and it victimizes us. These are not benevolent entities doing that. Well, the Jinn would have such a motive as well, for if they have a faction of them that want to come back into this world and anchor in on a more permanent basis again, they don't seem to be able to acquire a form to do that. So one of the ways to do it would be through a hybrid, where you could incorporate the genetics of the dominant species on the planet and merge that with your own abilities and raise those hybrids in an environment that would be have allegiance to their cause. This is what the ETs are supposed to be doing, and this would fit a Jinn agenda as well.
So if I'm hearing you right, Rosemary, you're saying the Jinn might have been responsible for just about every kind of activity on this planet that people have assumed might have been extraterrestrial.
They have a finger in everything. What we don't know is what is the extent of their involvement. Are they the majority of our experiences? Some of our experiences, does it shift around? As I mentioned a little earlier, I have consulted researchers all around the planet in different cultures from different religious perspectives, and there are some who say the Jinn account for everything. And since they are hidden, and they really don't tell us what they're doing, nor do the abducting ETs. They're not being, those entities aren't being honest with us either. We don't really know. And it seems like we don't want to deal with it. We don't want to think about it. It's the abductions are fringe things that happen to fringe people, somebody else, when actually what is going on affects all of us. If we are the victims of a Trojan horse sort of campaign, at some point that's going to turn against us in very unfavorable ways.
Men
One of the researchers
black.
That I consulted in England made the observation that the Jinn are coming through these dimensional barriers in relatively small numbers now, but their plan is to come through many more strong. And if we are unprepared, it could be very disastrous for human beings.
Men in black, what might they be?
Another form of Jinn. And early on in my shadow people research, I couldn't help but make the connection between shadow people and men in black. Here was another link to the ET phenomena as well. Men in black are... The classic men in black are male figures dressed in dark suits and clothing, driving around in black cars often, and intimidating ET experiencers and witnesses. They have odd characteristics about them. This would be very typical of jinn. They're not formed completely right. They have weird things about their appearances that don't make sense, weird ways of talking and acting, like they're uncomfortable in the physical world. But they seem to know a lot about contactees and abductees. They know where they live. They know their experiences. They know where to find them. And when contact is made between Men in Black and an experiencer, oftentimes a whole host of paranormal things start to happen. Poltergeist effects, nightmares, dream invasions, mental oppression, apparitions, missing time. And this seems to be part of the syndrome of harassment.
You know, it's amazing. How did you get going into your research? I mean, I wouldn't even know where to start.
You know, George, the odd thing is I didn't go looking for this. It sort of found me, and I think it was research that really needed to be done. A lot of this started with shadow people. Now, I was familiar with jinn, and I've been intrigued by them for a very long time when I was doing research in witchcraft, sorcery, Solomonic magic, and topics like that. I came across the jinn. And it was not until I got involved in shadow people, out of my own curiosity, and, the audience prompts me. I get requests from people for help in certain situations. I'll get a tidal wave of emails all related to the same sort of thing going on, and it prompts me to do deeper investigations. And then it was a matter of just following the leads. One thread led to another. I found that the deeper I went, the more complicated it got, and the more lines of inquiry opened up that had to be examined.
Well, are you enjoying this kind of research? I mean, did you come across anything that might have frightened you that you want to tell us about?
The whole scenario is disturbing. And, my work in the paranormal and metaphysical fields, it's on both sides of the fence. I've dealt with benevolent spirits and with spiritual enlightenment and growth and contact with high-level entities who have a much different approach toward human beings, a healing, illuminating kind of approach. And, you know, technically, well, isn't that where we'd all rather be with the good guys? But the dark side of things goes on. There is a dark underbelly to it, and it needs to be examined. So I do believe that this was a very purposeful part of my work, and that in many respects, I was being directed by my own spirit guides to do this because nobody else was willing to look at it.
You've looked at the Watchers. Explain that in the relationship to the jinn, Rosemary.
The Watchers from the biblical story, the sons of God, who were set to with the task of watching over humanity, coveted human women, left their posts, cohabited and created the Nephilim, the monstrous cannibals. They were cannibals and vampires. They ate flesh and drank blood and spread corruption on the land. The Watchers are often described as angels, but really their behavior matches the jinn. And this would be characteristic of the jinn to have some sort of like a boss or overseer role and see what's, you know, hey, there's something in it for us. So let's leave our posts and indulge ourselves. This would be very characteristic of jinn behavior. And it was a deal-making sort of thing. And the jinn are famous for making deals in exchange for teaching human beings the forbidden arts.
But don't they kind of renege on the deal?
Jinn will often do their bit. They will make their end of the deal, but they also want human beings to make their end of the deal back. It's a two-way street. It's not, I'm going to do favors for you just because I'm Mr. Nice Guy. Right. You're going to have to do favors for me, too. One of the things that I argue in the jinn connection is that we ought to re-examine a lot of our ancient alien ancient god, demigod encounters and experiences from the standpoint of jinn, because many of these beings and their behavior patterns are characteristic of jinn. So the jinn are salted in there throughout human history.
Scuttlers, what are they?
The scuttlers are a modern term for these
sounds like neighbors,
and they look like oily, oozy crabs. They're like shadow crabs. They were described to me by one of my UK contacts, Miles Johnston, who had worked in the broadcast profession for a good number of years and was involved in pirate radio stations during the heavy conflicts between Ireland and Northern Ireland. And these pirate radio stations would broadcast what they called intention-infused music across the border into Northern Ireland. This would be a form of thought therapy, that we infuse our music with good intentions and peace and harmony, and that this energy would be part of what would be received by the people listening to the music. Well, Miles discovered that they would have these frequent equipment breakdowns, and then it seemed to center around the transmitter. So he would have to go inside the transmitter, and he got the shock of his life by opening up the equipment and seeing these forms inside, and they looked like crabs, and they would scuttle out of the way as soon as he would see them and light would hit them, much the same way that shadow people will often disappear when people look at them. They don't want to be observed for very long periods of time. These entities seem to be intrinsically involved in the breakdown of equipment, stopping one of the peace efforts. He found out over the course of time that scuttlers were in other places too. They were in England. People were seeing them, were experiencing them. These beings had the capability of literally latching on to individuals and then causing certain kinds of health problems. This sounds like another form of shadow people, which would be another form of jinn. Shadow people are often blobs or pillars. They're not well-defined as human forms. I have seen them shape-shift in front of me from a human-like form into an amorphous blob of black into swirling black mist that just disappears. The scuttlers seem to be a very invasive form of this entity that gets into our electronic equipment.
Huh. Sounds like nasty-looking little creatures, huh?
And how pervasive they are, again, nobody knows. Nobody really knows. One of the things that I observed about shadow people was I had a number of cases, a whole subset. There are like these satellite patterns around the core experience of the bedroom invasion. Well, one of the satellite subsets were shadow people who seemed to be intensely interested in telecommunications. Hanging around people who were taking apart salvage cell phone towers, disassembling computers, working in electronics. And they seemed to be watching and observing, like wanting to know what the innards were and how things work. Well, shadow people seem to be very sensitive to electromagnetic energy and electrical fields.
They're definitely from other dimensions, Rosemary, no doubt. Rosemary Ellen Guiley's research, The Jinn Connection. And when we come back in a moment, she has written a book called The Encyclopedia of Dreams. We're going to talk about dreams. We'll be back.